This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy?
Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason with your host, John Rush. Presented by Cub Creek Heating and Air Conditioning.
And welcome, Thursday edition, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory joining me now. Steve House is still out. Dr. Kelly, but welcome. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's been a good week. Beautiful fall weather we're having.
We'll take it. And even with a little bit of rain we had earlier, yeah, it's making everything nice and green. So to your point, we will take it. All right. Lots to talk about today. I guess, as you probably would already have predicted, let's talk about what happened this week in regards to RFK Jr. We've got some autism stuff. We've got Donald Trump talking about Tylenol, which that's where I wanted to start, Dr. Kelly, because after reading and looking at a lot of things, at first I thought, you know, is that really a direction that he should go, given he's really not in the medical profession? But when it's all said and done, was he wrong?
Well, let's start with this. It was really touted to be an incredibly important press conference. They built it up and said that they were going to, you know, announce the cause of autism. I have to say that I was disappointed and a bit perplexed is the understatement of the century. It was a bit discombobulated and disorganized. They dipped their toe in the water multiple times about the idea of vaccines, but really focused instead on Tylenol, acetaminophen, being the cause or a potential significant cause of autism or other neurologic injuries. I think there was so much that was left out of the conference. And again, I was extraordinarily disappointed. We can get into what I believe is actually the truth regarding acetaminophen and what role it plays in neurologic injury in utero or of young children. But suffice to say, I do not believe that they actually hit the nail on the head.
All right. Well, let's start with, because I did have in my notes and something that even Charlie and I off air were talking about that we wanted you to cover is not only acetaminophen, but if you'd also cover, you know, ibuprofen, other muscle relaxers, Winshut, you know, over-the-counter stuff. For everybody listening, these are all over-the-counter drugs that you can go down to your local, you know, Walgreens, CVS, whatever, King Supers even, and buy. And I'd like to know, Charlie and I would, all of those particular over-the-counter drugs, what does each one of them do? Who should or shouldn't be taking some? And I know this is very generic and general, Dr. Kelly, because you don't know each person individually, but I do know that there are side effects with each and things we should be careful of.
Well, for decades, the only one of these drugs that has been approved or recommended for use in pregnant women has been acetaminophen. Aspirin and the non-steroidals, things like ibuprofen or naproxen sodium, are contraindicated and have been for decades in pregnancy. We don't prescribe them. Okay. So Tylenol was the go-to. It's what we were all taught in medical school. And it's certainly what it still even says when you look in the physician's desk reference as recently as yesterday. That is the, sort of the Bible for physicians for how to dose things, what conditions it can be used for, shouldn't be used for, contraindications, drug interactions, all those things. It's the, you know, it's a 4.5-inch thick Bible that we all use. It says, gives very, very vague language and says that there are fundamentally no studies that show any ill effects. Now, turns out that when you look further, and I didn't try to do this until just Monday. It does not appear that there were any significant studies ever done on acetaminophen and pregnancy. Or I certainly can't find them. So once again, we may have been taught things in medical school that simply weren't true. But for decades now, acetaminophen was first formulated back in, I think, 1887. It did not become used regularly until the 1950s, but it was used in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s by pregnant women at a time when the incidence of autism was fundamentally zero. You know, nobody, autism was not something that was a significant issue. It was maybe one in 100,000 births back in the 60s. Then, you know, all of a sudden, there's this massive increase in the rates of autism. In 1980, it was one in 10,000 births. All of a sudden, by, 2000, it's one in 150 births. And now, all of a sudden, this year, it's one in 30 births. Now, that is not simply because, quote, we became better at diagnosing it. Something changed. Yeah. And what I would submit to you is it isn't the Tylenol usage, it isn't acetaminophen usage that changed. The thing to me that changed was the frequency and the number of vaccines that were being given, both to children and to pregnant women. Okay. Prior to 25 years ago, prior to the year 2000, we did not really vaccinate pregnant women. It was just something we didn't do, and we didn't recommend it. All of a sudden in 2000, we start recommending that pregnant women get everything from hepatitis vaccines to influenza vaccines, RSV, you know, everything in between. And unfortunately, getting a vaccine is one of the most common causes of muscle aches and fever for which a woman who's pregnant might choose to take the drug that's recommended for that, which was acetaminophen, Tylenol. So I believe that if there is a relationship between acetaminophen and autism, it is, and I suspect that there is some relationship, it is not the Tylenol itself. It's the timing with the giving of the vaccine. In other words, if a pregnant woman, you know, a healthy pregnant woman falls and breaks her wrist, and because she's pregnant, the only thing she can take is Tylenol, or she, burns her hand and you know, gets a sunburn or something and needs something, she takes Tylenol, that baby, I do not believe, is at risk of developing autism. It's when she takes Tylenol to treat the muscle aches and fever, having gotten her flu shot.
Gotcha.
Likewise, if you take a two-year-old child, a one-year-old child, and that baby's fussy because it's teething, and you give it Tylenol, we don't have stories of my baby was teething, I gave it Tylenol, and you know, next thing I knew, it wasn't making eye contact, and its behavior changed. It's when the parent brings the child home from the doctor's office after having gotten its MMR vaccine, is fussy, gets right. the Tylenol, and all of a sudden, everything changes. So I believe that it is the association between acetaminophen and the giving of the vaccines that really is going to ultimately prove to be the issue, but that is not what they chose to focus on. They kind of danced around it, you know, dipped a toe in the water, mentioned vaccines, but then now back to Tylenol. And they kept coming back to acetaminophen. And again, I'm not saying acetaminophen is not a remarkably safe drug. There are far more overdoses and deaths from Tylenol every year than there ever were for something like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine by orders of magnitude. You know, it is not a remarkably safe drug. It is metabolized through the liver. It changes the metabolism of the liver of many things, including glutathione, which is critical for brain and neurologic development and function. So I'm not saying at all that there isn't an association, but I think that it's a bit of a smokescreen to focus on acetaminophen when the thing that changed when we saw all of a sudden the uptick in the incidence of autism, the thing that changed was the vaccines.
Gotcha. All right, great stopping point. We'll come back.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
All right, we are back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory with me today. If you want to know more about Dr. Kelly, by the way, maybe you're tuning in for the first time, go to our website, rushtoreason.com, and you can find more information on Dr. Kelly there. There's an entire page dedicated to her there. Okay, several messages coming in. I'll get all these answered as we have time. Trust me, we did have a question. I guess Charlie did, as much as anybody, Dr. Kelly, because you see this all the time. What is, you see this in drug commercials, by the way, what's an NSAID?
It's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
So what that means is that there are drugs that decrease inflammation. The primary drugs that decrease inflammation are steroids, things like prednisone. Prednisone is a steroid. So there are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which are things like ibuprofen, otherwise known as Advil, naproxen sodium, known as Aleve. Those are non-steroidals. They are anti-inflammatories. Aspirin is an anti-inflammatory,
okay.
And the steroids are clearly anti-inflammatories. In terms of providing analgesia, pain relief, aspirin and Tylenol and the non-steroidals all do that. Unfortunately, as I said before, the only one that has up until Monday been recommended for pregnant women was Tylenol. So as the president and they sort of, as I said, danced around it, right now, I don't know what they are suggesting that doctors should really use for pregnant women who need pain relief. I wouldn't choose to go with an opiate, you know, I'm not sure I feel comfortable with a pregnant woman who's, you know, treating her with, you know, codeine or oxycodone for pain. I can't give ibuprofen. I can't give one of the NSAIDs. I can't give aspirin. And if you can't give or are really reticent now to give Tylenol, it leaves you in a bit of a bind. It's not reasonable to think that a woman is going to go through 9 months of pregnancy without ever needing to treat any kind of pain, anything from a toothache to, you know, as I said, a sunburn. Obviously we don't ever recommend that pregnant women take anything they don't need to take.
Okay.
I think we probably have, gotten into a culture where people pop Tylenol, you know, like Tic Tacs as
right.
if it's, you know, a nothing to do it. And that's not right either, just because you're running a little low grade fever, or you've got a little ache or pain, particularly if you're pregnant. The better thing to do is just say, you know, I'll have some hot tea and go to bed and feel better tomorrow, because all of these medications can impact the fetus. But the idea that we are now going to avoid Tylenol altogether, I think, is probably unreasonable. And I'm hoping that they will flesh out a little bit more the studies that all of a sudden are coming out of the woodwork. You know, Mayo Clinic's got one, Harvard's got one. All of a sudden, it's really quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting all of this data came out about acetaminophen, but none of the studies controlled, when they look back, or any of the epidemiologic data, they didn't control for vaccination status. What was the reason the person took the Tylenol?
Yeah. Gotcha.
What did they take the Tylenol because they had muscle aches after getting a flu shot? Or did they take the Tylenol because they had a sore throat?
Right.
You know, did they take the Tylenol every day or once a week, twice a week? What was the frequency? Those sorts of things. So the studies were really not, you know, are not well controlled. And I think there's an awful lot we don't know. And again, when you talk, if anybody knows the stories of mothers of autistic children, it's Robert Kennedy Jr. It was that compelling information that really caused him to found Children's Health Defense all those years ago, because and I'm not talking about a handful of mothers, I'm talking about tens of thousands of parents who said, my child was normal, was meeting normal milestones, was, you know, learning to crawl, was making eye contact, totally interactive, learning, starting verbal skills. We went to the doctor, got the vaccines. That afternoon, the child was inconsolable and never made eye contact again. It was like flipping a switch.
Right. Right.
And I didn't used to believe that. I was one of the people sort of, you know, shrugging my shoulders
kind
and saying,
of poo-pooing it,
you
right?
know, these women. Yeah, I did. And I acknowledge it until about 6 years ago, when I started to really listen and be more thoughtful about it and say, there is something here.
Yeah.
There is clearly something. And when you look at the current vaccine schedule, again, we've talked about it so many times on this show, John, but people in our age demographic, Back then, people who were born in the 60s and 70s, based on what state you lived in, the recommended number of childhood vaccines, meaning from the day of birth until 18, was somewhere between 6 and 8 total shots. That number is now 84.
Wow.
84.
Hey, okay? Well, and really so, quick, I want to ask a question because I saw something on this the other day where and again, you see memes and different things, and you know me. I kind of take everything with a grain of salt till you do a little bit of research and then figure out, is there really something to this? Now, this one, I don't know that I can disagree with. And what this meme basically said was, given the fact there's that many, because it talked about, you know, there's well over 70 that a lot of young kids can get. And the comment basically was, Dr. Kelly, if they didn't bundle those up and they made you take each one of those individually, would parents still do it? And I think the answer would be a hard no.
Exactly, because, you know, one of the answers, I think, clearly is to disarticulate them. We know, for example, that the MMR, if it was separated into measles, mumps, and rubella and given us three separate shots, three separate visits, that's what the Japanese did. They got rid of the combined MMR. And when they did and they started giving the shots individually, they saw their autism rates plummet.
Hmm.
Okay. But as you said, if you now have to do them individually, you would do nothing else during the first, 6 or 8 years of your child's life, but go back
give them shots
to the pediatrician.
Right.
Okay. And so they do it for convenience. They bundle them because it number one, drives compliance.
Yep.
And they have led parents to believe that this is somehow healthy.
Yep.
But I've said from the beginning of the pandemic, going all the way back to late 2019, the human immune system is the last great frontier of medicine. It doesn't always respond the way we think it's going to. And I'm here to tell you that the human body, the immune system, was never meant to be challenged over and over and over again by a foreign protein, which is what is in vaccines. It's a foreign protein. It's got all sorts of other things mixed in with it, including we know that some of them still contain mercury, many of them contain aluminum and other things. And when you're constantly saying to your immune system, ha, try this one.
Right.
You know,
right.
Now,
right,
now
right,
respond
right.
to this one.
Right.
You're constantly like flogging it with stuff out of the blue. This little baby, day one, barely mm-hmm. has taken his first breath on this earth, and you're jabbing it with hepatitis B and asking its little immune system, respond to this. Oh my gosh!
It's
evil. It's
no, the
terrible.
Picture that you're painting for me is, and I'll use a sports analogy. It's sort of like you watch the combine, the NFL combine, and you see these young kids who, by the way, are super athletic, and yet they're running through a course. Let's call it that, Dr. Kelly, because that's what it is. And you've got a lot of other individuals, coaches, other players potentially. And as the guy's running down, zigzagging, somebody's knocking him, trying to knock him down. Then he zigzags the other way and he tries to get knocked down again and back and forth and back and forth. And he'll do that for 30, 40 yards. What you're describing is exactly what those guys do in the combine.
Exactly. And so you already have to think that this newborn baby and children, toddlers, they're already being faced with all of the pathogens that are out there in
true.
The environment,
true.
You know, whether it's pollen or rhinovirus or whatever it is. There are all these bacteria and viruses and mold and all this stuff that they're trying to deal with. And their immune systems are trying to learn those things and learn how to respond to them. And then on top of it, 84 different times you're going to jab it with something out of the blue.
Right.
You know, it's like their immune systems have no idea which end is up.
Agreed.
So the idea, for example, that some children will develop an autoimmune response to that's what autoimmune diseases are. In other words, you get a shot for something, you start to produce antibodies. You're supposed to produce antibodies to whatever it is, chickenpox, measles, mumps, whatever it is. The immune system at this point can get confused sometimes, and all of a sudden it starts forming antibodies against yourself, against your own tissues, which is why we have all these kids who have autoimmune related diseases like asthma and peanut allergies and eczema and all of these other food allergies that they didn't used to have because their poor immune systems are on fire. They're constantly mm-hmm. trying to battle a new foe that's been injected into their thigh. I mean, it's just not the way the immune system was made to react. And most of these things, let's face it, look, you're talking to somebody, I had chickenpox, measles, and mumps. The diseases, not the vaccines. I had the diseases. So did all of my siblings. And we're all just fine. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to be more thoughtful about which are the actual diseases that we're saying, whoa, we don't ever want to get that because the, you know, the outcome could be disastrous. The average child is going to, you know, skip right through having, you know, chicken pox or measles or mumps right. with very, very rare exception is not going to have a bad outcome. And I think the studies would prove that they're really, other than perhaps polio and tuberculosis, there isn't a vaccine out there that hasn't caused more problems than it's avoided.
Question, and again, it's another chart that I saw, and I always want to question and ask you because, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that, by the way, can be doctored up, may not be true. But I saw a map on autism where, you know, it sort of had different colors for different countries. And, of course, the highest rates of autism being red. And, of course, the United States is virtually red. And yet a lot of other countries, most other countries, Dr. Kelly, don't have the cases we have, and yet they're not doing some of the same things we're doing that we're talking about. Is that in fact true?
Yes, it is true. And, you know, there are many other countries that do not have vaccine mandates, for example. China doesn't have vaccine mandates. The United States does, but China doesn't, okay? There are many countries that have used far, far fewer vaccines than we use, and they space them out very differently than we do. Mm-hmm. In the United States, we have been led to believe that you are just one vaccine away from, you know, remarkably good health, and it's simply not the case. You cannot vaccinate your way to good health. Good health really comes from having a strong innate immune system.
Right.
I'm not saying that every single vaccine is contraindicated, but I think we are giving vaccines for things that are absolutely ridiculous. There's no reason to. There's no reason, frankly, for a male child to ever get a rubella vaccine. Okay? Hmm. Rubella is fundamentally a common cold. Okay? If you could argue to me that if a girl, a woman, a female gets to childbearing age and hasn't had rubella yet, that you could justify at the age of 20 or 25, whenever she's thinking about having children, she's never had rubella, to take a rubella vaccine, because should she contract rubella while she's pregnant, she could end up inducing a birth defect.
Okay.
For boys, there's not a justification on the planet.
Got it.
For a boy to get a rubella vaccine.
Got
and
it.
That's a fact. And that doesn't make me anti-vaccine. It makes me good.
No, you just
science.
Said that she should get one, you know, he shouldn't. Wait, that's exactly what you just said.
Correct. And she should when it comes time for her to think about starting a family.
Right.
Okay? Because there's no reason when she's 10, she doesn't need one.
Good point.
And so push it off. Hopefully she'll end up contracting, you know, rubella, the common cold, and we can easily test for antibodies, you know, before she starts having children. Likewise, there isn't a justification on this planet for a baby to get a hepatitis B vaccine.
Right.
If you wonder if the child, you know, it might get hepatitis B, test the mother. Do a blood test on mom. It's not that difficult. It's a simple blood test. Why would you instead inject a baby with a vaccine and induce its poor little brand new immune system to start going into overdrive?
Right. Great point. No, great point. And along the lines of, you know, taking things and letting your body work things out and so on. Again, whenever these things come up, there's all sorts of now experts that come out of the woodwork, and sometimes they are and sometimes they're not. But I was watching a doctor the other night, and he made sense. I mean, again, whether this guy's right or wrong, I thought I'd ask you to really determine if he is or isn't. But he was talking about just Tylenol in general and how a lot of people, to your point, will take them at just the slightest of sniffles, or they get a little bit of a fever, and so now they're taking something. And his point was, you know, that fever is there, and as long as it's not getting too high it's part of what we're doing in our bodies to expel the things that are going on inside. And sometimes actually taking, quote unquote, a drug to lower the fever may not actually be the right thing to do. What are your thoughts, and is he correct?
No, I think that's exactly correct. That's exactly right. There's a reason, likewise, if you take something like diarrhea, there's a reason you shouldn't run right out and start taking a drug like Imodium that stops gut motility and stops, you know, you
yeah,
from
you're trying,
having...
You're trying to expel what's there that doesn't want
to
be there, right?
Yeah. Let's get rid of whatever it was that's causing you this upset. Don't keep it in. Let's get rid of it. Same kind of theory. I think we've become very soft. We've have this entire, you know, two or three generations of people who think you should never have a bit of discomfort. You should never have a cough or a sneeze or a sniffle or a body ache. Sometimes it's your body's way of saying, as I said, time to make a cup of tea and climb in bed,
right.
Okay? Drink some extra fluids.
Right.
Every single thing doesn't need to be... I mean, you look at people's medicine cabinets, they've got 75 different cold and flu medications. You know, they've got pain medications, you know, up one side and down the other. And just the idea is somehow we are going to medicate our way out of every ill feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's really not smart science.
All right, last question before we take a break that somebody asked is, okay, we talked about, you know, Advil or ibuprofen. You talked about Tylenol. We'll get into maybe some of the other things that coincide with that when we come back from the break. But somebody asked, okay, what are the alternatives? In other words, if these are things that you maybe would want to try to avoid, maybe not at all costs, but let's just say you want to try to avoid it, minimize what you're actually, you know, popping into your mouth. What are some of the alternatives, even some of the natural things, Dr. Kelly?
Well, again, that's what I said. You're really in a bind because there aren't a ton of things. I am not a naturopathic expert by any means. You know, there are things, you know, that people try, things like chamomile for sleep, you know, to help relax and sleep, things of that sort. And I think any of those sorts of things are helpful if they work for you. There are teas that are, there are homeopathic things that don't cause the, you know, liver toxicity and the rest of, which is in the primary problem with acetaminophen is liver toxicity. And it decreases the way, as I said, it changes the way that you metabolize certain things. But you don't have, there aren't, certainly aren't a lot of over-the-counter remedies. I think the bigger issue is that people have got to have a different sort of threshold, if you will, for needing to take something. You know, even pain medication, look, when your doctor gives you, you know, strong pain medication, I don't care if you're getting Vicodin because you've got a broken leg. Nobody ever said it was to make you pain free.
Right.
It simply was intended to take the edge off enough that you can get through it, that you can get some sleep, that you can get through it. The idea that you are going to eradicate all pain. It's simply not reasonable, and it's not something that you should even, it's not even a good goal. You know, you don't want to, you know, eradicate all pain and all fever. It's there for a reason. Lots of times it's the pain's there to tell you to slow down. Don't walk on that leg or don't do X, Y, or Z, until this muscle or joint heals or whatever it is. So unfortunately, I wish I could say that I were a homeopathic, expert. I'm not, but there certainly are things out there. Arnica, I believe, is one of the things that a lot of people take for cold and flu if you want a homeopathic thing. But I would recommend that the best thing to do is to stop popping a pill every time you have the you know, slightest ache or pain.
Perfect timing. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. All right, now that we are back, Dr. Kelly Victory with us. Dr. Kelly, we had a call that came in just a moment ago, older individual, and maybe not real old because I'm getting to that stage myself, but 65 years of age, going to Thailand. Is there anything that they should do, he should do to be prepared for that?
Well, I would recommend that you take a sort of a broad range of medications with you so that you don't get caught needing something that you don't have. It's very simple to get, you know, some broad spectrum antibiotics, perhaps some antivirals, medications for pain or nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, those sorts of things. I recommend that everybody put together a travel kit to take those things. You don't want to be anywhere on the road and certainly not in a foreign country and be beholden to their system, particularly when you might not speak the language or have difficulty know who to trust.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the simplest thing to do is just bring, as I said, I recommend, you know, antibiotics like amoxicillin and medications for diarrhea and vomiting and those sorts of things that are common to call, you know, that might commonly occur there. You might also bring a few things like Neosporin or some topicals to treat you know, skin wounds or things that might happen. Other than that, go and have a great time. Thailand's on my bucket list.
Awesome. Okay. And by the way, I would like to do that as well. So let's really quick, somebody also mentioned, and I don't want to get off on a complete other topic, but I do think this is important to mention because there's a lot of folks out there listening that have followed us, I should say, Dr. Kelly, all the way through the past, you know, 5 years since COVID. And, you know, everybody out there listening knows where we came in when it came to masks and the mask mandates and all of that. Right now, currently, there are some individuals, some stars, by the way, which why these guys even get any kind of FaceTime is beyond me, like they're some sort of a medical expert, that are now trying to push mask mandates again. I already know your thoughts, but I still got to give you the floor and let you mention them.
It's just insanity. First of all, we know that face masks do virtually nothing to stop the spread of respiratory viruses. They just aren't effective, and that certainly is not why surgeons wear a face mask. The idea that I really believe this is about, again, about control. This is about people trying to make sure that they keep people in fear and do the single biggest, you know, the face mask was really the talisman. It was the sign of being virtuous and caring about others because you wore a face mask. You were a dutiful little soldier and covered your face in public. There is not any rationale from a medical or scientific point to do it, and it causes far more harm than good. The masks harbor bacteria and viruses themselves. They increase the amount of CO2 that you breathe in, particularly for children who don't have the expiratory force that an adult does, so they trap carbon dioxide in the mask, and it's part of what leads to headaches, difficulty focusing, concentrating, insomnia, all of those sorts of things. So, frankly, I would ignore those people. I don't think there's any scientific evidence behind it, and I'm not exactly sure what epidemic or outbreak they think that they're preventing or protecting you from.
That great question. And again, I already knew where you would be coming from on that because that's exactly where I'm coming from. I mean, some of this stuff just gets to be so literally, it's so ridiculous. And some of these, you know, stars or kids to the stars think they're, you know, somehow, some way, some sort of an expert when it comes to health in general, by the way. And frankly, Dr. Kelly, they're not. I mean, no, that would be no difference for, well, actually, I shouldn't say, I was going to say there'd be no difference in me going up and testifying. Actually, there is. I know more about it than they do.
Absolutely. I mean, why in the world, people, you know, as I said early on in my frustration of the censorship and the people arguing with me online and elsewhere, I said, you know, I really hope that the next crisis that we face as a nation or as a globe involves something like international markets, you know, or commodities pricing, something I know nothing about, but will incessantly and argue with people who have PhDs in it. You know, there's a reason why we're supposed to listen to people who actually have some training in this. I don't, you know, get out there and pontificate and talk about, you know, what people should do on things, you know, with their finances or anything else. It's not my area of expertise. And these influencers online, listen, you know, they've got a right to speak, and I'm not suggesting that they don't, but I do. But we have a right to ignore them.
All right. Somebody just said, too, that Jesse Waters, I guess last night, and Charlie mentioned this as well in my ear here earlier, where there's all sorts of pregnant women now, because of what Trump says, popping Tylenol almost like it's coming out of a Pez dispenser, basically saying, you know, he's not my OB. Are these people really that dumb, and are they potentially harming not only themselves but their baby by doing so, Dr. Kelly?
Yes, and I've seen, you know, dozens of these TikTok videos of, you know, very pregnant women, you know, popping Tylenol essentially because out of their disdain for President Trump. You know, I'll show you. It's absolute insanity. As I said, Tylenol, you know, regardless of whether or not we have proven an association with autism, the reality is that Tylenol is a serious drug. It can have profound liver toxicity. publicity. And the idea of doing something like that, you know, because you're somehow going to show President Trump, you know, if President Trump said that you shouldn't drink during pregnancy, would you do a TikTok video of you, you know, downing a bottle of Jack Daniels
right.
just to prove him
Great
wrong?
Point.
I mean, it's just lunacy.
Lunacy. It's lunacy.
It's really a mark of sickness. It's part yep. of this Trump derangement
Absolutely.
Syndrome. Except in this particular case, you're affecting an innocent unborn
Absolutely.
Baby.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Question came in. Been taking, Levothyroxine. Levothyroxine.
Okay, levothyroxine. It's
okay.
a thyroid supplement.
Yeah. Been taking it for many years. Read, though, the other day in one of the news publications that it could cause cancer, and those have been taking it for a long time. Is that true?
I have not seen any credible studies that indicate that supplement. You know, thyroid hormone is critical to life. Without it, you know, you can get into huge, huge, huge trouble. So obviously you need to keep your thyroid hormone. Many people need to supplement it. There are people who have had their thyroid glands removed because of cancer. There are people who have had it radiated for the same reason. There are people who have developed autoimmune illnesses that have attacked, you know, called Graves' disease, where they attack their thyroid and have thyroid issues. There are reasons, you know, people develop thyroiditis, inflammation of the thyroid, and therefore need to supplement thyroid going forward.
Okay.
I have not personally seen, when taken as prescribed in the doses that keep your thyroid level where it's supposed to be, where it would otherwise be kept naturally if you had a functioning thyroid gland, I have not seen any studies that show
okay.
that it causes cancer.
Good to know. So, yeah, to answer both of those questions, going back even to the one where, yes, you guys are mentioning these videos that you're seeing, and it really is, it's just, A, it's unwise. I mean, I think the way that I look at anymore, Dr. Kelly, especially from knowing you over all of these years, it's just unwise to pop anything, especially in excess. But to your point, if you really don't need it, you got a mild headache and you can live without it. Do you need to really take anything? No, wait and see what happens. Does it get stronger? Does it go away? Maybe you're dehydrated. There's all sorts of other things that can come into play as to why you might have that mild headache. So, you know, rather than just popping a pill, wait a little bit and see exactly what happens before you actually do so. And by the way, I think most of us know our bodies well enough to know, is it strong enough? You know, is this pain strong enough that I actually need something? I had another texter a moment ago that talks about taking Tylenol PM for, you know, minor aches and pains and so on, helps him sleep at night, and really wanted to know, is that really a big issue? And I will just give my own testimony. As somebody that had a disc removed, I blew my back out when I was in my early 20s because I was dumb as a rock, Dr. Kelly. Sorry I was. But anyways, after all of those years, I still suffer with, you know, a lot of back pain. In fact, I would say that there's a lot of times where, you know, waking up in the mornings, you know, you're stiff, I don't have a disc in a certain spot in my back. And yes, that's going to create some pain. There's scar tissue. There's other things, as you know, Dr. Kelly, that builds up over time. And the reality is, it's something I've learned to live with. And I will say that I won't really take anything until that pain gets to be an 8 or above. If it's below that, I do my very best to just live with it, even going to bed at night. Is it discomfortable or is it uncomfortable? Yeah, but I think over the years, I've just learned to deal with it because I watched other family members, I don't want to get into great detail, but I watched another family member literally ruin his life by taking too much crap for the same thing. And I think for me, Dr. Kelly, I had the opposite. It was like watching an alcoholic, you know, family member. I was the opposite. I didn't want to be that, so I didn't. And maybe at times I should, to take the edge off, but I won't because of that.
No, I agree. And I think if you have a chronic pain condition, the best thing you can do is really go to a pain specialist to look at other ways you can deal with it other than pharmaceuticals. For some people, it's yoga, meditation, exercise. I have some significant chronic pain issues. I have very, very debilitating arthritis in my hands, and mm-hmm. I also have yep. a spine issue. I had the better part of my cervical spine fused when I was in my 30s.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about.
I do. And it simply would not be reasonable or a way to live to be on chronic pain medication.
Nope.
So, you know,
nope.
for me, you know, exercise, yoga, other things
Yeah, and I want to throw this in really quick, too, for a lot of you listening. And one of the things that really has helped me, we talk about on the roundtable, they're not a sponsor here, but the red light therapy that we talk about on the roundtable that comes out of Canada, that's very high-end units. These are not the $100 units you get off of Amazon, Dr. Kelly. It's very high-intensity red light waves. I will tell you that personally, does that work? Yes. The other thing that I use is the TENS unit. I have one of those, and that electricity at times just does wonders on the pain. So like you, Dr. Kelly, I've learned to try to use other aids that I'm not popping something in and digesting it.
Yeah, you know, for many people, TENS units are very, very helpful. What the TENS unit does fundamentally, if you have muscle or nerve pain, is it kind of confuses the nervous system purposely.
Yes.
It sends out micro little electric shocks that sort of dull the nerve, sort of insensitize it or confuse it, so that it does for many, many people to remarkably take away the pain. I also think that some of the patches can be useful for some people, and at least you're providing it just to the area where you're having pain.
Yep. Yep.
Some people get huge relief from things like CBD cream. For me, I have to say it did absolutely nothing.
Me too.
But I have patients for whom CBD is like a miracle. They put it on, their hand or their knee or whatever it is, and they just get remarkable results. So I think you are obligated to try anything you can and limit the amount of actual pharmaceuticals that you're ingesting.
I agree. I actually found a cream. It's a Voltaire. It's sold here, but I guess maybe I shouldn't say this, but there's a stronger dosage that's sold south of the border that I pick up and bring back home, Dr. Kelly, because it's a higher concentration. And I will tell you that as a topical cream, or as a topical ointment, maybe is the best way. It's not a cream, it's an ointment, it's clear. But it's not like mentholatum or Icy Hot or anything along those lines. It's much better, and it's topical. And even for, I've got arthritis in my hands like you do as well, and I will tell you that it helps out immensely. So I, like you, I try to do everything I possibly can, not popping a pill.
Exactly. And so I think it's going to be individuals who need very much, as I said, for me, CBD does nothing, and for others,
me neither.
It's a miracle drug. So I think, but the idea, again, to get back to it, we have become sort of soft as a culture. When I think about what my parents did, what they took, the number of sick days they took, the number of times,
there weren't any.
Run to the urgent care.
There weren't any, Dr. Kelly.
Even
when you and I were kids, urgent care didn't exist.
Exactly. You literally had to have your brains coming out.
Correct.
Before my mom was taking you to the ER.
Correct.
And even then, you'd more likely get a butterfly bandage. We didn't run to the doctor for everything. There weren't urgent cares. You sure as heck didn't go to the emergency department without something that was really life-threatening. The idea, of going for these minor complaints. So I think there's been a cultural shift. And it's really been fomented by big pharma. You cannot turn on the television without seeing, oh my Lord, commercial after commercial for some condition. I went to medical school. I've never heard of half of these acronyms. I've never even heard of. But somebody, there's a drug for it. There's a shot for it. There's a pill for it. And you're just constantly bombarded with this idea that, oh, if you have any problem, we've got a solution. Mm-hmm. We've got a pill or a treatment.
Well, that's what the ads all tell us, Dr. Kelly.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so it's this constant advertising to people to go get the newest drug or the newest treatment for whatever condition it is you have, rather than maybe just being a little bit more cautious, taking some downtime, trying some more natural remedies. And not being such a baby about everything.
Well, and for those of you listening, please, I understand, Dr. Kelly does as well. I understand pain. I understand how that works. I understand how uncomfortable and how much discomfort that can create. I also understand that it can affect the way you sleep and so on. And I get all of that. And on the same token, I have learned, like Dr. Kelly, that there are other things that you can do. Sometimes it's hot water. Sometimes it's a hot shower. Sometimes it's a hot tub. Sometimes it's other things, Dr. Kelly, that you and I have just gone through and mentioned. And I will tell you, sometimes, by the way, one thing that I learned in some physical therapy I did, oh gosh, long, long time ago, sometimes it's exercises, stretching, different things along those lines that can actually make things more comfortable than they would be before. And I do all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that, you know, physicians, and I can't blame it on physicians because we were incentivized to treat pain as, you know, the sixth vital sign. And doctors, you know, that this is part of what ended up causing the opiate epidemic. Mm-hmm. Doctors were told, number
That's
one,
right.
you won't get reimbursed
That's
if you
right.
don't write down on a scale of 1 to 10, how much pain do you have? And if you are deemed to not have appropriately treated that patient's pain, which is in the eyes or, you know, very subjective based on the patient, then so why do you think doctors started saying, look, you know, I don't care. Here's a prescription for 30 Vicodin or, you know, 30 whatever it is, rather than giving, you know, it out more cautiously. And we, it certainly contributed to the opioid crisis and people being addicted to opiates. You know, now we're seeing the error of that and saying, okay, look, we need to dial it back, treat, you know, mm-hmm. educate people about the risks of these things.
Yep.
So many, and to be clear, you know, the only thing, Tylenol, the bottle of Tylenol in your cabinet, isn't the only thing that contains acetaminophen. Tons of these
True.
Combination
True.
Cold and flu things,
Good
you
point.
Know, DayQuil, NyQuil,
Good
you
point.
Know, cough and, you know, cold and flu remedy, including Vicodin, you know, these things, you know, the Percocet, the set in Percocet is acetaminophen. That's what, you know, that's where the set part comes of that drug. So it's codeine, you know, it's a opiate with acetaminophen. So be cautious if you're trying to limit the amount of acetaminophen that you're taking. And I think it probably is wise for everybody to, because it is liver toxic, independent of any relationship potentially to autism, then be aware that it's not just the bottle of Tylenol. There are so many formulations, particularly
yep.
of cold
yep.
and flu medications that include it.
Dr. Kelly, that's it for today. The time goes by really fast. Thank you for all of the great information today. We appreciate it greatly. I know our listeners do as well. And I wish you a great rest of your evening. And thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
All right. Another great hour with Dr. Kelly Victory. And once again, if you want more information on Dr. Kelly, you may be listening in for the first time. Just go to rushtoreason.com. You can find her there. You can also find all of our past episodes every single Thursday for literally the past 5 years, with the exception of just a few here and there. We have been doing this same hour since that time. And you can go back and find all those episodes as well. All right. Hour two is next. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.